You're like the living, breathing Indiana Jones, man. Just a little bit taller.
I did feel like when they took out that boiled baby goat head.
Oh, my God.
You just cracked it open. You just spread the brain on some bread like jelly. It's a, it's a fun experience. It's not half bad. Not bad.
Welcome to the Hometown Hollywood podcast, where you can find advice, inspiration, and strategies for success from talented people that are making a name for themselves inside the film industry, but outside of the major film cities. Here's your host, the one, the only, Travis Myers.
Man, you're not supposed to make me cry.
Hello, my name is Travis Myers, and this is the Hometown Hollywood podcast. First off, I'd like to apologize real quick. When I first started this podcast, I wanted to make sure that it was a weekly thing that you can expect on a certain day of the week, like clockwork. And then shortly after starting the podcast, my home got hit by Hurricane Laura, and we've been out of the home. And so I haven't been able to continue that schedule as perfectly as I had hoped. So now that we are mostly back home and have some sort of normalcy, I'm going to upload every Tuesday. That might switch to Friday, but it should be every week, unless we get hit by another hurricane, which is also very possible in our area. We have a lineup of some amazing guests that I honestly can't believe agreed to be on the show. So now would be the time to do yourself a favor and subscribe so you don't miss out. Today's guest is Joey Ketches, a director of photography outside of the Sacramento, California area. If you're listening to today's podcast and don't feel inspired or have a more positive outlook on life, then you should probably get that checked, because Joey is 100% concentrated positivity. Joey is a super talented DP. He has an awesome story about his journey into the film industry and has an inspiring work ethic. In this interview, you'll learn about what it takes to make quarantine passion projects, camera gear, DIY anamorphic lenses, making the jump from Alaskan missionary to full-time filmmaker, and what tools you can use to network, learn, and step up your film game. If you're wanting to get into the film industry or level up where you currently are and need some inspiration, you're going to want to save this podcast so you can reference back to it. I personally will probably just put it in my morning routine to listen to Joey's voice so I have this more positive energy shot, because we all know I need that. So without any further ado, we will get into the interview. Joey, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I want to say that you fooled me in the best way possible, because I've been following your post a while. I've seen your Story Lit Films page, and every time you post something, it seems to just like blow up on these different Facebook groups, because everybody thinks, oh man, look at these magical frames. And then I asked you to be on the podcast because, like, dang, this is high level work. And then as I'm doing a deeper dive, it's you. It's you in the frames. Like, oh my gosh. This guy's the king of home movies.
I gladly accept that title as king of home movies, because I've been making them since like fourth grade. So that's good, man. I've finally accomplished something in my life I'm proud of. There you go.
Well, I love it. That's kind of the dream for me. I've been doing home movies for a while and filming myself, or having my mom film me, back in the day.
Absolutely.
But can you take us on the journey on how you became, or how you got into the filmmaking business? Did you always know that you wanted to go into film, or like, did you go to film school? What was that process for the Joey Ketches?
Yeah, man, it took me a while to figure out what I was doing. I will say I always had a love for filmmaking. I mean, movies in general. I used to watch movies upon movies upon movies as a kid. First movie I ever saw was Tim Burton's Batman, and stole my heart. It was like, I want to be involved in filmmaking. And when I was in fifth grade, my dad bought our family like a Handycam recorder, and we used to do we would do remakes of Soul Train, Rescue 911, By the time I was in high school, we had assembled a little cast of friends, and we would make short films that were ridiculously bad. But we had such a great time doing it. I actually got interested in filmmaking originally from the acting side. And I went to college to get a degree in theater because they didn't have a film program. So I went to theater, and my goal was to just, you know, study story, study characters, study film, all those things to the best of my ability. So there was a professor there. He passed away recently, but I used to go in his office, and I mean, I would sit in there for hours and just pick his brain. You know, I was a single guy. I didn't have any family to be home to, so I would just like pour over, you know, film and studying film and buying scripts and, you know, just watching anything I could get my hands on by guys like Scorsese and Nolan and Alfred Hitchcock and all these guys, and just study the greats. So I really poured in a long time. And my plan was to go to LA and go to USC and join their film program. Right as I was gearing up to go there, I met my wife that summer. And okay, that really changed my plans, because I just fell head over heels for her. I mean, I could have married her the day I met her. Like, I was just, I just knew she was the one. And, you know, we got married within 6 months after meeting each other. And, you know, we got involved a little bit at our church and went up to Alaska and served on a mission trip. And after being up there with the kids up there, we realized just how much they needed help to, you know, just grow as adults and work through a lot of hard problems they had. And so we just said, hey, you know, we would love to spend our lives helping these kids out. So I did end up going to LA, but I didn't go to film school. I went to seminary.
Okay.
And I spent 5 years studying Greek and Hebrew and man, a whole bunch of things, writing papers that were so long. I felt like I was making stuff up, because I couldn't do the page count. I'm not a very smart guy, but I tried to do the work.
Did you know that Martin Scorsese, he initially went to school to be a priest?
No, I didn't know that.
But found that, yeah, I recently learned that in a book I was reading. Actually, there was a couple filmmakers, a couple well-known directors who were in that same category. But, you know, I look at it no different, because in ministry, you're a teacher. In filmmaking, you are also a teacher. Mm. And you're teaching a subject. You're just doing it through a more indirect approach.
And after that, we moved up to Alaska, and we spent 3 years there. Actually, my twin sons were born up there, and we had a lot of crazy experiences. But due to a medical emergency, we had to leave. And when I came back down here to California, it was right around the time that there was sort of this revolution going on with the film world, where DSLRs and you know, Blackmagic pocket cameras were becoming available to the public. And it was sort of this thing of like, hey, I didn't go to film school, but I love filmmaking. I always have. There's equipment that's accessible. There's people who are passionate about making films in this foothill region right outside of Sacramento. I'm going to just launch into a filmmaking career. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to jump headfirst in and go for it. And my wife initially was like, you're crazy. You have to support a family. You realize this. And I was like, I know, but we're going for this. And we're going to try and do this. And so I bought my first camera. It was a Blackmagic cinema camera, 2.5K. Bought it from a friend of mine in LA who runs a production company. They had just bought a Red, and they were selling their Blackmagic cinema camera. So I bought it from them. And I just started shooting. I shot whatever I could. And, you know, from there, I just began to pray and I asked God to provide for us. And more clients started showing up. Things got busier, started shooting short films, started shooting features, started shooting music videos, commercials, and it just really took off, you know, and I'm just grateful every day that I get to do what I do. But that was the journey.
Wow. I admire people who have the courage and, in your case, the faith to just jump into it, because I know many people who are always on the fence because, like, oh, I've got the family, I don't know if I can do it, and then they get stuck. And
right,
sometimes I feel stuck. I mean, I kind of do.
Right,
I do commercial work as a full time job, but it's not quite where. I mean, I don't know if anyone is ever really quite where they want to be, unless they've.
right,
because there's definitely always something more. Like, oh, I always could be doing higher level work or something. There's never an end to it, but that takes a lot of guts to just jump in.
I'll readily acknowledge that I am a small guy in a big pond. Like, I'm just a small fish in a big pond. I'm not a heavy hitter in the industry. I don't have a resume that somebody's going to look at and be like, oh my gosh, this guy has done so many things. He's won an Emmy. He's up for this award. I don't have a resume to boast of. I'm a small guy. And I actually relish in that right now, because I listen to a lot of, you know, directors and DPs who are in the industry and they're heavy hitters. And a lot of times some of them will mention how they love the period when they could just produce these small kind of passion projects. And whether it was a script they wrote or a short film they made, whatever it was, they talk about how they just love that period. So I'm really trying to relish the moment and just enjoy being able to be creative and not feel any boundaries to that creativity. And I'm not here to pretend like I'm something I'm not. I am a small town guy, but I absolutely love what I do, and I have a strong passion to create narratives and stories that really move and motivate people.
For sure. And I think you do that wonderfully. Just watched your little home movie that you made with your family, the Jesse James
The Ballad of Jesse James. Yeah.
Obviously that's your wife singing. Right. You have your kids in it as well.
Right. Yep. Yep.
I think that just looks, it's such a beautiful little piece.
Thank you, man.
I just saw the frames beforehand. I thought, oh man, this is a huge production. And then finding out, this is his family, and what you're able to do with just your family and a passion project just throws all the work I've ever done in the garbage.
Get out of here.
I really love it. Could you talk more about the process of making that passion project? Is that something that you've just decided, I feel like doing this, and we're going to take a weekend? Or how long did it take you to do?
Yeah. That's a great question. It was really challenging. It was very hard, and it took me several weeks to do, because I am a huge proponent of a film crew. I am all in on a film crew. I am so bad at running audio. I am so bad at running, being an electrician in the gaffing side. It's just things like that are so challenging to me. You know, the people who do the makeup, all this stuff. I'm such a huge proponent of the film crew, because really it's a team effort to get any project done. So when I do a project like this, where it's kind of just like me, and I'm trying to run all the lighting, I'm trying to run sound, I'm trying to run all these things, there's going to be a ton of errors. There's going to be a ton of missteps and a bunch of things where I'm like, I wish I could have had done this differently. But basically, what I wanted to achieve with this project was to just look at a film that I love, The Assassination of Jesse James, and just say, you know, I'm inspired by these shots. There's something about this film that moves me and inspires me. And I want to take my camera and I want to create something that, you know, just in a short piece would maybe move and inspire others. So a lot of it was research. When's the sun going to be down on this location? When is the when am I going to be able to control the lighting in this room to the way I want it to be? So I'd be out there with my light meter measuring light. I would be timing the sun on my sun tracker app and just trying to do all these things in preparation. And then came the shooting, which took several weekends because, you know, I'm having to shoot this section at this time and this section at that time. And so I didn't storyboard it, but I kind of storyboarded it in my head and I knew what I wanted. The other tricky thing was I was kind of teaching my wife along how to use a cinema camera and to pull focus. And I would run all the exposure and the lighting and all that, but then I would have her, you know, hit record and make sure everything's being captured and things like that. So it was challenging, you know? Yeah. Thank you, man. I will tell her that she'll be happy to hear that.
Yeah, you taught her well, and she is obviously a good student because every shot in that little piece looked great.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that very much. And I mean, that to me was like a quarantine thing. 'Cause I'm doing two things in quarantine. I'm spending loads of time educating. I mean, I'm just taking course upon course and listening to podcast after podcast. And the other thing I'm doing is I want to get out there and I want to play with my tools. I want to play with my lighting. I want to play with my cameras. I want to really pour into it and think through and draw up lighting schematics and test them out. And so a lot of that footage was just saying like, hey, let's use it and not lose it.
You're talking about the tools, and I like gear. I like talking about gear.
Yeah.
You have the Ursa Mini G2, I believe.
Yes, correct.
And I think you use some kind of anamorphic rig.
Yes.
How do you like working with those?
So the G2 is a phenomenal bang for buck camera. I call it the poor man's Ari camera. It really renders skin tones beautifully. It captures such a gorgeous image. I've just been blown away by the camera. The thing that's weakest on it, I would say, is the ISO. You know, you can't really push this too high up. They're built for being under controlled lighting and exterior lighting under certain controlled situations. So if you handle it rightly, it can be a huge tool in your belt and really get the job done well for you. The anamorphic setup is pretty cool because it's anamorphic on a budget. I call it anamorphic because it's a taking lens paired with a projector lens, and then it's bound together with a single focus adapter. And the only downside to it is that it's very clunky. It takes some time to set up, and it's really tough because you're usually limited to a 50 millimeter to 85 millimeter lens. Otherwise you get too much vignetting. So it's a challenge to use it, but anytime you're shooting anamorphic, you're using your sensor to its maximum capacity. And so I do like shooting anamorphic, but it is a clunky and difficult setup. I've taken a break from it for a while.
Like if you're shooting with that rig, is that something that you'll just stick one lens on and go the full day? Or will you, because I had one for a short while. And
right,
I used it and I feel like I had something wrong because the chromatic aberration that I was getting was so distracting.
Right.
And then I see frames like yours and Nick Pilecki, who I had on last time.
Oh, Nick's great, man. Nick's a good buddy of mine. He's a great guy. It's super talented.
Yeah, he really is. And both of you are using these anamorphic rigs and getting these super sharp, beautiful, creamy images. And like, I built mine wrong. I got to get rid of this thing. As much as I love it, I can't shove another $500 $1,000 to try to make this thing work. Because it was like, oh, I'll buy this piece and then it'll work. Oops, I got the wrong thing. And so someone needs to, there probably is a guide on how to build those things correctly, but I never got it. And so
they are such a challenge to use. You know, there's kind of a revolution going on right now with people really jumping on the anamorphic train and just loving the look. Even photographers are shooting things anamorphic, and you can buy anamorphic for your iPhone. You know, it's a pretty big movement.
Moondog Labs. Right.
But it's you know, when you're shooting the budget friendly anamorphic, the setup is clunky. There's a lot of room for error and little room for getting it right. You know, there's so much footage I've shot anamorphic where I'm like, I don't know that I can use this because I was too wide open on my taking lens, and it creates a ghostly glow around the subject, and it looks like you're coming in ultra soft when you're shooting it. And so you really got to stop down to the right, you know, the right aperture, the right f-stop, and do all these kinds of things to make it work. And it can be a challenge. It can really push you in a lot of situations. So, you know, I shoot maybe 1/3, 25% of my projects anamorphic because it's just so challenging to do, and it's really got to be the right set and right production to make it all work. Otherwise, yeah. It's like I'm shooting spherical, and I have no problem doing that. I love shooting spherical.
Well, that's good. It's worth it if the project requires.
Definitely.
And then eventually someone's just going to make a cheap anamorphic lens that everybody loves, and they're going to sell like hotcakes. And so I'm waiting for that day.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we've seen with the camera side. And it does seem like folks on the lens side are really trying to bridge that gap. You know, you got, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it correctly, but Siru. Just produce an anamorphic lens, and you know, I've seen some beautiful shots and stuff shot on the Pocket Cinema 4K with those lenses, and yeah, they're beautiful. You know, I'm eager to try one out when they get that, maybe on the next model or two, seeing what they can do.
For sure. And so I've noticed looking back at your work that it's always been good, but there seems to be an evolution where you have just blossomed or metamorphosized, I guess, like a butterfly, and your work has just beautified, I guess. Do you have, you said you're a constant studier of podcasts and courses. Do you have a certain thing that you would attribute to, like, what is your main source of inspiration right now?
That's a great question. I appreciate you saying that too.
This podcast.
This podcast is everything. Everyone subscribe right now, okay? This is no, for real though. I was really encouraged to listen to yours and JP's discussion. I'm looking forward to listening to the next podcast. You mentioned that you had interviewed Nick, and I'm looking forward to that. Things like this do take me forward. They help me mentally. They help me see others who are doing this and making a living out of it. They help encourage me and inspire me. There was a funny story. I wrote when I was first looking to get into filmmaking. I wrote an author and film critic whom I greatly admire and respect. And I just asked him for advice. I said, hey, I'm thinking of getting into filmmaking. Do you have any wisdom you can share with me, any advice? And I waited a couple days for his response, and he did write back. And it was the best, worst advice I've ever gotten in my life. All that he wrote was all caps, and it said, work hard. And I remember sitting there initially reading it like, gee, thanks a lot. You know, this is what was the point of me writing you and pouring out my heart, you know, but
I knew that. Yeah,
exactly. But as I thought about it, you know, I'm like, you know, on the one hand, it's the worst advice because it's so short. It's, yeah, I already knew that, right? But on the other hand, it's the best advice because those words ring in my head all the time. And when I'm feeling exhausted or I'm feeling like being lazy and going and just doing nothing, those words ring in my head. To strive, to work harder, to continue to press in and learn and grow and do whatever I can to make myself a better person and filmmaker. And so when I hear those words in my head and it's like, I don't want to go shoot this thing, I say, no, work hard. Go be a part of this set. Go do whatever you can to be on every set and work and learn and learn from other people. Now, obviously, I want to balance that because I have a family and I prioritize my wife and my kids and I want to be with them. I want to spend time with them. So there is time for fun and play. Don't get me wrong, but I do want to work hard. Some of the podcasts I find inspiring, in addition to this one, obviously, is Team Deacons, Roger Deacons. And my brother's friend, Adam Wyman, started that podcast and the folks they bring on there, you know, Joel Cohen, Denis Villanuevo. I'm probably not saying his name right. I love the Go Creative Show because I am first and foremost a DP, and Go Creative Show is primarily focused on DPs. And I listen to the Go Creative Show all the time. I watch a lot of YouTube. I just find guys who are, you know, doing things on an indie level. I go on MZ. I take all of Shane Hurlbutt's courses. I do the Hurlbutt Academy. You know, I just, all these resources, I'm just continually looking at, watching, learning from. I ask guys questions on Instagram. You know, I see their work and I private message them. I say, hey, what was your setup? Give me a little more details on this. You know, I don't look at people as competition. I look at them as friends and I say, what can I learn from this guy? What can I learn from this girl? What's their setup? What's their skill set? How can I learn from them? Rather than compare myself and say, gosh, I'll never get to that level, I say, no, how do I learn and be more like them and more skilled in the craft that we're all doing here?
I think that's one thing I've learned the longer I've been in the business of trying to make films and I don't know, just admiring other filmmakers, is you think at the beginning that, or at least I have, is that, man, these people at such a higher level, they would never talk to me.
Right. right.
People who are doing such quality work, they are untouchable. Right. And then as you start to maybe reach out to these people, ask questions, and whether it's a Facebook, Instagram, YouTube community, you realize, oh, these are real people.
Yeah.
A lot of them are pretty nice.
Right. Right.
A lot of them
it's
are
so
pretty
true.
Giving and willing to help the whole community grow. And
that's,
I think that's
so
cool,
true.
Just knowing that people are real people.
Yeah. There was a guy in my high school. He was two grades above me. And I mean, this guy, he went to USC. He's hit it big. He's shot feature films in Hollywood. He's shot music videos that, you know, for guys like Drake, and these things have millions of views, and Justin Bieber, you know, he's done all these big projects and continues to do big projects. And, you know, it's always neat to be able to message him and just, you know, ask, you know, what lens did you use on this? What was your process for this shot? You know, and just to get feedback from people like that. It really is a film community. And when we're all pursuing something we love together, it's just great to meet people who love the same thing and want to help each other out. And, you know, we can all just put our egos aside and say, let's help each other and be a team here and a family. And it really becomes that. It's great.
Sure. So you were saying that it's important to have a team, like we're all in this together. And I know that connections are one of the ways to make it in the film industry. Do you have an approach to networking, or are you just a people person and you, it's no effort to just reach out to people of work you admire? Or do you, does your work just speak for you at this point and people reach out to you?
You know, that's something I've thought about a lot. And, you know, I've approached it a couple ways. Number one, and I know this, you know, not everybody agrees with this approach, but I always pray. I just pray every morning and every night with my kids. And I just ask God for his help to connect me to the right people. And, you know, it's amazing the doors he opens and the people he connects you with. And so that's always been my number one go-to strategy. But secondly, I think it's a both and of what you were just saying. I've reached out to people and I've done that two ways. One way is I've gone on film sets and sometimes it's a film set where it's a passion project. Nobody's getting paid. We're all just doing work because we want to create something. We want to make something that's fantastic and we can share with other people. And I really look at that as like, hey, I'm going to get to know people and maybe I can help them on a project down the road and they're going to need to hire a DP and they'll remember, oh, Joey's a DP, you know, we'll give him a call. And so I just come to meet people and, you know, whether that's a paid project or an unpaid project, it's working together, doing something you love and people remember that and they use you down the road, you know. Another way I've done that is, to reach out to people directly and, you know, through Instagram and just say, hey, you know, I love your work. Maybe we can collaborate sometime. But yeah, there's been a lot of people who have just reached out to me directly. And I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn or anything because I'm humbled by it because I look at the work of other people and I say, I'm humbled you would look and talk to me about your project because I know there's so many other talented people that you could reach out to. So I'm humbled you reached out to me. Thank you. You know, it's a very humbling thing to me when that sort of thing happens. And I really treasure that. I value that. So, yeah.
Your work. I know I asked you the question, but I know it does speak for you. And I really admire what you do. And I'm going to keep... like I always do, put them in my folder of my lookbook as a reference.
Awesome, like
this is,
man,
the kind of look we're going for.
Awesome. I'm so happy to hear that.
And so I think I kind of have the answer in my head to this question, but you live in Sacramento. What is your why for working in the location that you are when you could move down south to LA and try to make it work from there?
Yeah, you know, this is something my wife and I have talked about a lot. And I do think there is something to being in LA, being in New York, trying to crack into that mainstream media filmmaking. I really do think there's something to that. And, you know, I would encourage anyone who's in a situation in life where they're able to go and do that, to go and pursue it and go for it,
right,
and see what happens. For guys like me who, you know, have a family and, you know, filmmaking equipment has become so accessible, whether you own your equipment or you rent your equipment, which is something I still do even on various projects when necessary, when needed, you can make it. You can make a film career right where you are. You might not make it into the mainstream media, but you know there are things with the advent of home streaming, which has become such a big thing now. The circle of entertainment is happening in the home. Now, I'm a theater guy through and through. I love the theater. I love being in the theater. But I do think there is a huge market for content to be created through the streaming network. And for folks who are more indie, in the indie market, things like Netflix and Amazon Prime are great ways to make a career out of you know, things like documentary and narrative filmmaking, if you put the work in and you can be a self-starter. I was just listening to an interview with Joel Cohen on Team Deacons, and he mentioned that's what him and his brother did. They wrote a script and they went to investors, door to door to investors, and they raised enough money to shoot their film. So they had total control over the film. And I look at that and I'm like, you know, when I get my first feature length script that I can be part of, you know, I don't care what position I am. Hopefully it's the DP, because that's what I'm aiming for. But I want to do that. I want to be part of that and go door to door, get investors, and let's produce this thing. Let's make a film. You know, let's, if you love making movies, you will put the work in and make it happen. So just logistically for me, short answer for me at this point of my life, you know, being where I am and being able to make films now is a treasure. And I never got into this with the attitude of, I just want to do it because I want to make money. I got into it because I had a strong passion and love for it. And I don't care if I'm making a lot of money or a little bit of money. As long as I'm getting paid to do what I love, I'm going to keep pursuing it and enjoying it.
I think that's really cool. I think there's been a lot of progress in probably the internet and social media. Well, for sure, it's helped a lot because now you can connect with people. It's probably never been easier to connect with people.
So true.
In the industry.
And, it really is. You know, even it's incredible. Even these DPs on these big shows, like, you know, I hear them on a podcast and I might go message them and just say, hey, I really enjoyed your podcast. Thanks for sharing your wisdom. And they're always so courteous, man. They're just really nice people. And it's incredible. You can get a hold of these people through social media. And, you know, I try not to be on social media a lot. I try to balance it, but it is a great way to network and meet people and really be involved in across the world. It's a really great thing.
Sure. And you even had a short film about that as well.
Yeah, I did. You know what's funny about that? So the short film, man, I was really excited to make that. I made that for myself because I had a problem on my phone to where it was becoming like a drug. And I you know, it's almost like anytime I was in someone's presence, I had to have my phone with me. I had to have it out. And it just hit me one day, you know, I got to stop this and just be with people and be present with people and learn to put my phone down, put it away. And be able to concentrate more on things I'm studying and people I'm with. So I shot that film, and the next day, one of my kids was drowning in our pool.
Oh.
And I ran and I jumped in the pool to save him, and I had my phone in my pocket. And so my phone literally died the next day after I shot that short film.
That's a sign.
Yeah, right. No, you know, I really love making that short film. And I feel like of all the projects I've done, that one has really impacted people the most to where, you know, it's really caused them to think and say like, oh my gosh, I'm on my phone too much. I got to stop this. And, you know, it was never meant to say like technology's bad. It was just meant to say, don't let your phone own you. You need to own your phone, right? And no one to say no. And so those are the kinds of projects I want to make, things that move people and motivate people and take them on a journey and really cause them to think afterwards.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the phone addiction pandemic that we also have going on in the world.
Right. Right.
I was having a conversation with my friend, and I just noticed how much like I couldn't even make eye contact because I was looking at my phone so often. And so
because
of that and so many other reasons, I just like, you know what? I'm going to block the internet from my phone.
Smart move.
It's so difficult, though. If you want to try to do that, it's almost impossible. I had to get like five different apps and put like five different passwords on these apps to even make it a thing. I've kind of done it. So, but when the first week where I finally figured it out, like block the internet, all my phone does is call and text, and I can get email because I didn't block that.
Right.
I visited some family and I was there. I was present. I didn't have anything else to do. And I hadn't seen these people in such a long time. And they hardly even saw me because they were on their phone the whole time I was visiting.
Right.
And I was so conscious of like, this was me. I wouldn't have even known.
Right.
I feel like I'd be more, what is it? I don't know. I feel like I'd be more productive just even in like a normal work day, but also in filmmaking because I can be more concentrated. Like, okay, I'm going to listen to this whole podcast and not be, not going to stop it and go on Facebook or.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You could be looking on Facebook right now as we're having this conversation, you know, it's like.
Yeah, I'm going to close out that window now that you've mentioned it. No.
You know, I do think there is something to our concentration being broken by these continual interruptions. I look at a guy who I admire like Christopher Nolan, who doesn't, as far as I know, doesn't own a cell phone, who if he can, he meets in person with all his cast and crew. He doesn't do it over the phone. You know, I look at a guy like that who's just never made a bad film. And even his first indie feature is just story-wise, it's lights out good. You know, you look at a guy like that and you're like, somebody who's that disciplined and has that level of concentration and that kind of self-initiative, you know, there's really something to that. And so I think the more I can get off my phone and, you know, use it as a business tool, as a network tool, like we were talking about. But at the same time, you know, not letting it own my life and take away from relationships and work and concentration. I think we're better off for that, to be honest.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. I mean, I've seen some of Nolan's films. They're okay.
he's all right. Yeah, he's all right. You know, anytime somebody says ever. Nolan's overrated, that is a hill I will die on. I will battle that person. So anybody listening to this who wants to challenge me, bring it on, man. We'll have a long talk, all right?
I will find a guest that that doesn't like Christopher Nolan, and then I will
send them my
start
way.
Start the match.
I'll set them straight. Yeah, you have to referee it though, all right? Because I can get a little out of control.
I can tell. It seems like a I guess the last question is, how do you maintain the best hair in the biz?
Oh my gosh.
Admire your hair.
Here's the secret, Travis. Let me give it to you right now. Marry a hairdresser, man. That's all I can say, all right? My not only do I boast of my wife being the most beautiful, amazing person I've ever met, but she went to school for hairdressing. So that's the secret, man. If it were up to me, I would have. You should have seen my high school haircut, my senior year in high school. I had an afro that, I kid you not,
wow,
would touch the sides of a doorway if I walked through it. I mean, it was that big. I could send you a picture and you would be like, no way, that's a wig. It was legit my hair. So if it were up to me, man, I would have, who knows what kind of haircut I would have, but I'm married to a wonderful woman who takes good care of me, man. She's awesome. That's secret.
Incredible. I didn't
Secret's
know we were
going to
give,
you know,
a plug to your wife and her hairdressing business, but
she's
know,
not doing it anymore.
Well, I guess we'll leave
though.
A link
she's...
in the bio. Oh man, just a so you got she's... your own personal hairdresser.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Dang, you have got That's... it made, Joey.
I'm blessed, man. I don't know what to say. There's really nothing I can complain about in life, man. I'm gonna die a happy man one day, and it's all about loving people and being around people, and you know, there's so much negativity in the world today, and you know, if we just truly listened to people and cared about people and just poured into others, you know, just said, hey, I'm gonna forget and forego my rights or my opinion on this, and I'm gonna just love people, and you know, this world would be a much different place. So it's guys like you, Travis, you're trying to spread a positive message here, and I really appreciate you doing this podcast, man. So thank you so much.
I really appreciate that, and I appreciate those words of wisdom. I think that's something that whatever your belief system is, if you just love people, I mean,
right.
I can't think of too many negative things that could happen just by constantly trying to love people and
yeah,
work hard, like that right. Advice you got.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Well, Joey, I have loved talking to you on this podcast, and I know people are going to want to connect with you and follow you. Where is the best place they can do that?
Yeah, we're all joking about social media. You can show up to my front door. No, I'm just kidding. Instagram is a great way to get a hold of me. You know, a lot of people, and I dialogue with a lot of people on there. In fact, I treat my Instagram as part of my business. So, you know, I try to post things I'm shooting, different things I've color graded, and, you know, just fun movie facts on there. I'm a huge movie nerd. So if you like movie facts and nerdy facts, check out my Instagram stories. You could play the games on there and have fun, and we can all laugh at all the silly answers on there and everything. So yeah, it's a fun time.
It's perfect. Well, I know that you're going to continue to do awesome things. You're going to live by the wonderful, terrible advice you were given to work hard.
Work and, hard. All caps.
Work hard in all caps. I feel like that should be a shirt. If I have merch for this show, it's just going to be work hard, all caps. And that is going to be the first t-shirt.
There you go. Hey, my wife.
I'll give you some royalties.
My wife is a screen printer now, so I can make the shirt for you, Travis. I'm going to send you one. All right. I'm going to have her make it. And you post that on your Instagram and tag me in it. I want to see it. All right.
This is an inspired conversation. Things are just happening. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. And
thanks for having me, brother.
We will see you next time.
Sounds great, man. Thank you.
And that's it. Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hollywood podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please write a review and show some love. I hope this helps you do great work, be the artist you want to be, and helps you not to be afraid to jump in with both feet and make things happen in your film community. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, share, spread the word with your film friends, leave a comment in ways that I can improve as a host or what you liked about the show, maybe some questions you would like from future guests, because we've got, like I said before, a lot of awesome ones in the queue, so you're not going to want to miss out on those. Stay tuned for our next awesome guest on the Hometown Hollywood podcast.
Okay, so if you did the deep dive, maybe you already knew this, but one of my nicknames in high school was JoJo Bigelow. Yeah, I told you, I got nothing to hide, man. Nothing to hide at all.